Well, greetings once again to all of Turdville. It is Thursday, March 31st, last day of Q1 2016. But it's also A2A Day. Every Thursday, we host these online webinars, giving you, the listener and subscriber, the opportunity to interact and ask any question you'd like of whomever we bring on. And this week's guest is a real treat, and it's an honor to have him with us. It's Dr. Dave Janda. Many of you know Dr. Dave. He's got a weekly program in his home radio program in his hometown of Ann Arbor, Michigan, called Operation Freedom, which is a must listen, either live or by podcast. He's also a practicing orthopedic surgeon. And what is very interesting about Dave is he has been a consultant to every single U.S. administration from Reagan through W. Bush, and somehow not a consultant to the Obama administration, which is interesting. This has left him a lengthy list of friends and contacts in Washington, trustworthy friends, not like lobbyists and stuff, but actual trustworthy friends that confide in him all sorts of information. And so, again, makes him a valuable resource to all of us. And that's why it's so great to have him here for A2A. So, Dr. Dave, with that introduction, thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me back. It's always a pleasure. And as we were speaking before, I truly enjoy the website. I love going to the site. It is one of the premier, if not the most premier site in the world when it comes to getting information that is truly based on truth as opposed to spin. In your introduction, you said it's a treat to have me back. You know, I've been called a lot of things, but never a treat. So that's very kind. Thanks very much, Craig. That's very nice of you. I'll have to tell my wife when I get home today.
A treat.
Well, I don't think she'll agree, but that's okay.
The place I want to start today is about your recent announcement concerning your, let's just call it, early retirement from healthcare. But I want to remind everybody, if you have any questions about healthcare, either in the U.S. or in Canada, Europe, how it's all kind of melding together. If you have any questions about Dr. Dave and the other work he does and his contacts in Washington, D.C., you have any questions about anything, this is your chance to ask. On your GoToWebinar control panel, there is a questions tab. You click it, a dialogue box pops up, and you type in whatever you'd like me to ask Dave, and we'll get to that part of the show here in a minute. Before we get going, though, Dave, the main thing I wanted to ask you about is the stuff we were talking about a couple weeks ago, late one night, even later where you are in Michigan. But we sat around and visited by phone for about an hour, and you were telling me about these plans that you have to take early retirement, if you will. I mean, all the effort and study and work becoming one of the best orthopedic surgeons, not only in Michigan, but in all the U.S., and now you're going to retire. Why, Dave? What is driving this decision? You want to share some details with everybody?
Well, I guess it comes back actually down, Craig, to when I started in medicine. You know, when you become a physician, the first thing you do is you take an oath. It's a Hippocratic oath that folks have taken for hundreds and hundreds of years. And part of that oath is to do no harm. Now, in my career over the past 36 years, I've tried to not only live up to that oath day and night, but also to add to the oath, because a lot of my research I focused on is prevention. So not only doing no harm, but preventing harm. Now, I must say, the Ivory Tower medicine elite of the AMA don't really embrace that approach, right? Because I have a, I would say, a very hate-hate relationship, if you will, with the AMA. It's not even a love-hate, it's a hate-hate. I think they are really... The medical establishment and I really don't get along, because I come at it from a prevention standpoint, and they really don't have any interest in prevention. And the reason is because all they care about is money, period. I mean, I can be diplomatic. I'm not a diplomat. You know that. Anybody who listens to me on the radio knows that. They really care about money, and they don't care about people and ultimately their welfare and the welfare of the system. And that's why I think prevention is so important. So when I started on this journey, when I was back at Northwestern, when I went to medical school in Chicago, graduated in 1984, you take this oath when you get done, and you start, you take it at the beginning of med school, you take it at the end. And what ultimately came to this reason why I made this decision of why I need to leave medicine now. Yes, as anyone will tell you, I'm older. Yes, I am older. But, you know, in the big scheme of things, I probably would have probably gone another 6-7 years in doing what I did, or as long as I felt my capabilities were still at 100%. Because the one thing you don't want to see is, you know, as you grow up in this business, you see people that are operating too long, and I never wanted to be in that category. And I don't think I'm in that category yet, and probably I don't think I would be for another, as I said, 6-7 years. But the reason why I'm leaving now is because I believe it's virtually impossible for me to honor the oath I took of doing no harm by participating in a system that by the day is run and domineered by big government bureaucrats and big business folks from the insurance industry. And big insurance has always been involved in medicine since I got involved. I mean, they came into being, getting more and more involvement 20 years before I got involved. But, you know, when we have a patient and I wanted to do something and the insurance company would refuse, the first thing I would do, and this obviously is very politically incorrect, but it worked for my entire career. I would call up the insurance person who usually didn't have any functional medical knowledge that had denied the treatment or the testing. And I'd ask them where they went to medical school, where they did their internship, residency, fellowship, how many years of clinical practice they had. And of course, they could not come up with any answers to those. And then I'd say, so what I'm going to do with my next phone call is I am going to call the Attorney General of the state of Michigan, where I practice, and I'm going to report you for practicing medicine without a license. I can tell you 100% of the time, the test, the treatment would then be approved for my patient. Okay. So the insurance companies tried to domineer healthcare delivery, but if you're a doc willing to take the time, you could fight them and get the appropriate treatment and care for your patient. That has started to change significantly. And the real significant change has been with the advent of Obamacare. Obamacare gave the insurance industry and government bureaucrats beyond teeth. It gave them a shredding machine of what they could do to every person's freedom, healthcare freedom, and the type of care they could get. And I truly believe that if you look, and I said this from the very beginning, Craig, you know, everybody talks about when Obamacare was implemented. Obamacare was implemented, as we've discussed in previous podcasts, Obamacare, the first part of Obamacare was hidden in the stimulus bill. The first part of Obamacare was passed into law in February of 2009 with the passage of the stimulus bill. That's where the enforcement boards were. That's where the rationing boards were. The second part of Obamacare, the so-called health care bill that passed in 2010, was it supplemented what had already been done in the stimulus bill. But really, it was a two-part takeover of the healthcare system. I truly believe that Obamacare was not written by Obama. He's the puppet. He is the puppet that is out there to push this across. So, and the reason, and they're smart. The people that wrote it were the globalists, and the people that were, including folks, many folks within high-end folks within the insurance industry. This is an incestuous relationship that's developed, not just in healthcare, but in pretty much anything across the board, as I see it, between big government and big business. It's kind of a fascism model, if you will.
Right.
Right. And what's happened is that now, so when we have somebody that is being denied treatment, you know, as I said, I would call the insurance company. I'd accuse them of practicing medicine without a license. They'd immediately back down. I can tell you with the advent of Obamacare, it becomes much more difficult for me to get approval for my patients. And it's going to be impossible come January 1st, 2017.
Can you expand on that?
Because this is something that the media is not going to talk about.
Right.
Because they're owned by the globalists.
Because this is inside baseball stuff that your doctor probably won't even tell you.
Well, and might not tell you, but might not even know. I'll tell you what's really scary, Craig. You know, I lecture all around the country, right? And I will present on Obamacare. I went to a national meeting and they asked me to speak behind a president of a major medical society. Okay. The president of this major medical society came up and gave this presentation on Obamacare, which was beyond pure fabrication. It was rainbows and lollipops. It was something that obviously the insurance industry and the globalists had written for the guy.
Yeah.
And I'm supposed to follow that. Well, you can imagine how that happened. You know, I was kind of like, well, here we go, folks. You know, you just got a version of what's coming at you that is completely and fabricated and wrong. And now we're going to give you, if you will, the Lady Gaga version, if you want to call it that. And I let them have across the board. Well, there were hundreds of people in the audience, Craig, and I looked, and these people, their mouths were open. And these are people that are leaders throughout our country in medicine. Afterwards, they came up to me. They said, I had no idea this stuff was in there. I had no clue. And people don't. And the reason is because they part of Obamacare is transforming patient care into computer care. And what do I mean by that? Next time you go to your doc, take a look at your watch, how much time that doc is on the computer and trying to talk to you, and how much that doc is looking at you or touching you or examining you.
Yeah.
And the answer is that about 90% of the time will be spent by the doc on the computer. Now, that is one of the ramifications of the implementation of Obamacare, because part of the Obamacare system that was hidden in the stimulus bill was the creation of an enforcement board called the National Coordinator's Office. And this National Coordinator's Office, come January 2017, will be responsible for, as it's put in the state in the stimulus bill, monitoring treatments to ensure providers, docs, and hospitals are following government protocols.
Monitoring protocol, treatment.
Yes, right. So, which is very scary.
Right.
And the protocols that are developed are developed by another board that was created in the stimulus bill, called the Federal Coordinating Council for Comparative Effectiveness Research. That board is in charge of creating the protocols. So, for example, in our practice right now, practices around the country, they are demanding that you use electronic medical records, okay? So that you as a doc have to have a computer in the room and you have to document all this stuff electronically, and it immediately gets shut off to the insurance company, and that immediately gets shot to the government, okay? Because our practice refuses to do that, because we believe there's a patient confidentiality problem. We not only believe it, we know it. If you look at what happened in California several months ago, they were completely shut down because hackers got in their system, stole all kinds of folks' medical record stuff, and shut down their system. And it happened again just this past week in New York. And then these hackers hold these places for ransom. So because we refuse to use electronic medical records in our practice, we get hit for a 10% fine of every patient we see. Okay? Now, come March 1st of this year, the government and the insurance companies, because they're in collusion, they sent these forms that we're supposed to give to every patient, okay, and ask them these questions. Now, some of the questions are benign, but we, in our practice, have refused to ask those questions. Such questions as, now remember, as you mentioned, I'm an orthopedic surgeon. All my partners are orthopedic surgeons. All I do is shoulder stuff. I'm a boring guy. So people are coming to see me for their shoulder. And on this questionnaire, I'm supposed to ask the patient, what's their sexual preference? Really? How is that going to positively affect anything I'm going to do for you taking care of your shoulder? It goes on. I'm supposed to ask, do you own guns? How many guns do you own? Do you keep them in your house? Guess what? I don't care. Just don't bring the gun in here and shoot my staff or myself.
Right.
I don't care if you have an arsenal at home. just don't do something in our office with it. Don't do something out in public and hurt somebody. The point is that because we refuse to hand out this questionnaire and ask the questions, we're getting hammered for another 10%.
And Dave, would it, why would the government in this kind of backhanded way try to be collecting data on who has guns and who keeps guns in their home?
Because as I've said from the very beginning, Craig, and it was evident in the stimulus bill, Obamacare is a big part of Obamacare is all about control and data mining. And the easiest way to control people is to get the data on them so they know where they can go after them.
Right. Because if the government
and this is one of the big problems. And one of the things that actually came out, and Chris Held, ophthalmologist out of San Antonio, Texas, she's a big healthcare policy person. I have her on Operation Freedom quite often. Chris uncovered the fact that these electronic medical records that are being sent to the insurance companies, which are then being sent to the government, there was somebody who had identified, and Chris outed this, that the government is then packaging that data, supposedly taking people's names off of it, but still packaging that data they're getting, and they're selling it to third parties that are interested in data acquisition on population-based information.
And Dave, I guess what I'm driving at is if the federal government under some office of the census or something sent out a questionnaire to every citizen asking them if they had guns in the home and where do they keep them, there would be a justifiable outrage from everyone from the NRA on down. But if you can have the doctor ask that question.
Right, because let's face it, whether it's true or not, docs are seen as being at least fairly reputable.
Uh-huh.
Fairly. Not always. There's some real slime out there.
And benign.
But the bottom line is that one of the things, and I can tell you this in discussions I've had with people in Washington, okay? And this is years ago, I think in the Bush 1 administration, you know, they said to me, well, you know, docs, you know, having docs on board is important for us because you guys get a sense, you folks get a sense of what's really happening with people long before anybody else does because people tell you things they would never tell other people.
Right.
Well, so that was said to me 20 some years ago. So they're using that.
Yep.
And one of the problems and one of the things that I mentioned in when I gave my dissertation during my radio show called Trading a Scalpel for a Pitchfork is that really what happens is that docs are getting turned into data mining scribes, yeah, essentially, and then the docs are then coerced to, because you're fined if you don't, to turn over that data to Big Brother.
Right.
And this is a system that's now created that's a rationed-based system. You see, Obamacare is all about the rationing and denying of care. And if it's not, then why in the world did they create these rationing boards in the first part of Obamacare, which was in the stimulus bill?
Mm-hmm.
You see, and that's why, and it's great that it's actually for the globalists, this is not by accident that Obama's president. It's not by accident that a black guy by the name of Obama is president, because the first criticisms that came out against myself and other docs that opposed this was that we were racist.
Right, just like if you're in the
Okay, we were racist. Now, yeah. And here's how I combat it. And they're usually left with, you know, they just shut the hell up. I tell them, I'm not a racist, I'm a realist. And the reality of the situation is that Obamacare is both based on the most unethical and inhumane means of cutting costs, which I have fought against big insurance companies for my entire career, which is the rationing and denying of care. The problem here, Craig, is that if I want to defend my patient, just like I used to call the insurance companies and accuse them of practicing medicine without a license, who do I call now?
Yeah.
With the government
right.
running the show.
Right.
Who do I call? Because here's what happens is that in Obamacare, it states in the stimulus bill that, quote, hospitals and providers and doctors that are not meaningful users of the system will face penalties. And the Secretary of Health and Human Services can impose more stringent measures and penalties of meaningful use over time. And what all that means is that if you're not going along with their protocols, and the protocols, and I said from the very beginning, I'm out of this when the protocols kick in. It's, and if you look at their timeline of what they're doing and how they're phasing it all in, the bottom line is the protocols are going to be kicking in the beginning of January 2017, which is why I'm getting done at the end of December. Because I can tell you, I've been told by folks in the know in Washington, Dave, you know, it's not just that they put the IRS on you to take you out, which failed. It's that they're waiting for you to break a protocol. And when you break a protocol, and this was told to me when I gave a keynote address to Congress, to members of Congress, both sides of the aisle were there, some of them. Pelosi wasn't there, of course, because she couldn't handle it. But back in July of 2010, so after the stimulus bill passed, July 2009, after the stimulus bill passed, but before the health care bill passed, when I spoke to members of Congress, these congressmen looked at me and they go, well, you realize when these protocols kick in, you're going to be one of the first people taken out because it's limitless of what they can fine you.
Yeah.
And a couple of congressmen said, Dave, if you break the protocol in your first offense, they can fine you over $100,000. And if you keep violating that protocol, they might just throw you in jail.
So you're left with no choice.
Well, actually, Craig, it actually comes back to something that happened in my family 100 years ago, and this is something you and I've never discussed, and I've actually never talked about on the radio. You know, my great grandfather came from Czechoslovakia. He was the youngest brewmaster ever at the Pilsner Urquell Brewery.
My
in
guy,
Prague.
Kind of guy.
And this guy, he became the head brewmaster at 19 years of age. He got to be really well known in the Czech Republic. And there was this uprising. You'll find this hard to believe. A member of my family was involved in an uprising against the Habsburg family, the emperors of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire. And he was involved in this, and they were on the wrong side of it. And he had a blowout. He had to get out of the country because the family's getting wiped out by the Habsburgs. So he gets out, he comes to Chicago, he goes to a bunch of breweries and says, listen, I can make your beer better. And he was the guy who had the original formula for Pilsner, the Pilsner formula. Mm. And finally, there was a guy who was running a brewery in Chicago, Garden City Brewery, and he gave my great-grandfather a job. And my great-grandfather changed the beer around, and the thing went nuts. And as this guy aged, the owner of the brewery, he didn't have any dependents, he allowed my great-grandfather to buy the brewery. And he bought the brewery, and he built it into a very large entity in Chicago until Prohibition hit in 1913. And when Prohibition hit, he had an option of trying to stick it out. Right. I mean, he didn't think Prohibition would really hit. In fact, a year before Prohibition hit, Augie Bush, St. Louis fame, came to him and said, why don't we merge companies? Because something big and bad's coming down the line. He goes, I know, because I pay a bunch of politicians. I know what's coming. My great grandfather was like, you know what? You make crappy beer. You make beer out of rice. I don't like your beer. He goes, I don't want it. Why would I merge with a crappy beer company? You treat your employees terribly. I treat mine well. No, forget it. Well, what ended up happening is that he came to work one day and he was wrong. He thought, well, you know what? And just as people are going to be wrong with Obamacare, they'd say, you know what? It's going to be okay. It's going to be different, but it'll eventually be okay. No, it won't. It's analogous to Prohibition, only this time related to not alcohol, but related to healthcare. And what happened to my great-grandfather is he came to work and there were a bunch of Fed agents sitting outside of his brewery, which was really big in Chicago. He had a full city block by a full city block, and all his employees were on the street. And they locked it up, and they wouldn't let him in. And all he did was he asked to go get his nameplate, his bronze nameplate, off the front of his door. It's a bronze nameplate. I still have it. It's the first thing I see every morning, along with a picture of him outside his brewery. It's a picture my dad used to have on his dresser. And my dad said, when I die, I want you to have this on your dresser too, and I want you to look at this the first thing you wake up every morning and know what your government's capable of. What ended up happening to my great-grandfather is that he was so distraught over what happened with his brewery and losing his brewery and losing his all his employees were gone, and he ended up having a stroke within a couple of days of this happening. And when he was on his deathbed, and you'll love this, he gave my grandfather 30 gold coins. And he said, Hubert, a government that is willing to do this to a hardworking businessman and destroy his life is going to come and destroy this entire economy. This is in 1920 or 1913. And he said, this is 1920. He goes, you need to take care of the family. And the only thing that will get your our family through, because he goes, I won't be around, are these gold coins. And my grandfather used those 30, and my great-grandfather was right. And when that depression hit, which I truly believe we can thank our federal government for that depression just as what we can thank our federal government for this, and the banksters that were back then and same names back then and same names now. He used those 30 coins to get our family through the depression from 1920 to through the depression. It's interesting, when Prohibition ended in 1933, my great-grandfather's brewery was still standing there, padlocked. And it got sold at auction, and you know who bought it?
The Bushes?
Augie Bush.
How about that?
And Prohibition was about, really was about, empowering those that had already been donating to the political class. Because it eliminated competition across the board. And that's what Obamacare is about, really. This is what happened to my great-grandfather in 1913 is happening to every physician in this country.
Yeah.
In 2013, 2016, 2020, it's all the same. Because what's happening is that the government and their political puppets are getting control of the entire healthcare delivery system. And if you can, and the question is why? And the answer is this, is if they can control your health and your healthcare delivery, that same entity can control everything about your life. What you eat, what you drink, how you live, and how you die. And that's how sinister these bastards are.
Dave, I tell you what, that is a that's a fantastic story. And analogous to today, no doubt about it. And
here's the sidelight on that. My great grandfather, he had three options. He could have joined Augie Bush and essentially compromised his principles, right?
Yeah.
He could have kept going, which is what he did, and say, you know what, it's going to change, but it won't be that bad. He was wrong. And the third thing he could have done is he could have changed his focus. Some of the breweries that survived, if you look at the Stroh's Brewery, the reason why it survived, they changed their focus. They started to make ice cream.
Yeah.
They kept ice cream going until Prohibition was rescinded, and that is when they came back into the beer business.
Yeah.
So when I look at this as a family, if you will, lesson, I could keep practicing medicine and compromise my principles and go along with these protocols and violate the oath I took. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
I could just keep going. And I can tell you, if I go to January 2nd, 2017, I'm going to be in debt hundreds of thousands of dollars because they'll be slapping fines on me so fast you wouldn't know it hit me.
Yeah, and it's not.
Or the third thing I can do is rather than make an ice cream like the Stroh's did and the Schlitz did, what I can do is I can change focus, and that's what I'm doing. You see, I'm going to stay in the operating room, but not in the operating room in a hospital. My operating room is Operation Freedom. It's my work on the internet. It's my work in writing. It's my work in educating as many people as possible as far as how their freedoms are being stripped and what they can do to stop it.
And my friend, we will be here to support you every step of the way, anything we can do to help out, because your voice is vital to...
Well, that's very kind, and it means a lot to me coming from you and coming from this community. Because the turdites out there, I believe, are going to be the survivors when this whole system resets.
Yeah,
I really believe that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Dave, I want to get into some of the questions because we're already about 25 minutes into this. And I know you're a busy guy and you're helping us out over probably your lunch hour. So I probably better dive into, we've got, gosh, five or six questions in queue already. And I've got one that was posted to the site by a subscriber named Fred, who couldn't join us today. So if you don't mind, I'm going to dive right into some of these questions, all right?
Okay, fire ahead.
All right, this is from Fred. Dr. Dave, Do you agree with what Carl Denninger says about how Trump's stated intention to not kowtow to the medical cartel could produce massive savings to the American public and government without any need for new laws or congressional action?
Yes.
Okay. Hey, next question.
No, let me tell you something. I don't want to get all political and stuff like this, but I can tell you this. One of the huge problems we have in our country, as I said in my announcement about me retiring, ever since the day Ronald Reagan left office, every person that's occupied that office, and I believe this to be a fact, and I know it to be a fact, is owned and operated by the criminal international banking syndicate, of which the medical industrial complex, the insurance industry, the pharmaceutical industry, big pharma, are a part of. And the problem is that my experience is the only guy who was willing to take them on, and I know was willing to take them on because I heard him say it in meetings I was at, was Ronald Reagan. As far as George Bush 1, Bush 2, Clinton, forget about it. They're part of the system. They were not gonna go against it. And Obama, he's just a puppet for the same system. So I mean, no. I really think of all of them, I think Trump is willing to take them on.
At least
I do.
Gives the appearance to at least try. You know,
right,
what you're getting with the other guys.
You'll know how serious he is when he starts naming who's going to be advising him.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I'll be able to tell you in 15 seconds whether he's serious or not when he starts naming who he's going to have help him on the healthcare front.
Well, I vote for you to be head of Health and Human Services, so we'll see.
That's very kind, but I don't think that would ever happen.
Well, I understand you're looking for a day job beginning the first
year.
Okay. All right. Next question comes from Joe. It's a little bit lengthy, so hang in there with me with this. He says, hello, Dr. Janda. There's plenty of evidence that points to the heavy influence of private foundations on the practice of allopathic medicine. I guess that is using drugs? Allopathic?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's heavy influence of private foundations to the practice of allopathic medicine going back to the early 1900s. At best, this was profit motivated. Other than the field of emergency trauma medicine, which has accomplished great things to save lives, what other branches of allopathic medicine do you view as contributing to people's long-term health? And did I describe allopathic medicine? What the hell is that? I've never heard that term before. So let's start there.
Well, when we're dealing with, let me go back a second. Let me stick with my training.
Okay.
And then we'll go into the allopathic. When I look at my training over the years, it's interesting. The various departments at various different medical schools are all funded by pharmaceutical companies or instrument companies or medical device companies. And you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to say, well, wait a minute, you know, is what I'm being trained here or being educated on, is this really legit? And many times you come to the conclusion, you know what, this is really self-serving of the very entities that's funding these departments. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about allopathic medicine, when I hear allopathic medicine, and I think of alternative medicine, okay, as opposed to what's discussed as being mainstream medicine, okay?
Yeah.
Now, when I hear mainstream medicine, what it pops in my mind, and I don't think I'm very typical for most docs, but when I hear mainstream medicine, I think bought-off medicine, okay? That's right. What I think, okay? So allopathic medicine is more alternative medicine models. So I can tell you in my practice, and I am not typical, I will talk about homeopathic treatments that could be utilized, such as, let me give you an example. One of the best things I think people could take for inflammation, actually for general body wellness, is turmeric, okay? The spice that's used in Indian food. It also comes in pill form. I believe it's one of the best anti-inflammatory medications out there. Big Pharma hates me for saying that because they make billions and billions of dollars on, you name the anti-inflammatory.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the other things I actually recommend that actually has helped me incredibly, because I have a really bad neck and back problem, is acupuncture. So the problem is that these alternative models aren't discussed in medical schools. They're not discussed in residency programs. And these allopathic or alternative models are very effective. And this is just a couple I'm giving you that can make a beneficial difference for folks. The problem is there's no money behind them that supports it.
Mm-hmm.
And people throughout medical school or residency are not taught this. So when I have residents rotating with me and medical students, they go, well, that person we saw, and you sent them out, and you suggested they get acupuncture, and now they're coming back and they're doing some physical therapy, also told them, and the acupuncture, and they're coming back and they're doing great. Well, where did you learn that? And my answer is, I didn't learn it in medical school.
Right.
I didn't learn it in residency or fellowship. I read it because I wanted to take a look at a bigger picture of medicine and get a bigger picture of what else can be done to help people. So, unfortunately, big government and big insurance are tied at the hip to medical instrument companies, to big pharma. And unfortunately, if someone said to me, what's the future of allopathic medicine, or if you will, alternative medicine, I would tell you that it's not bleak, but it's also not bright. And the reason is because the big money's driving this bus right now.
Yeah.
And allopathic medicine is not a part of that.
And you're not incented in any way, especially after the 1st of January next year, to explore anything like that or even discuss that with your patients. And let me just go back, because you've told me this before. As of January the 1st, you go in, and I'm just going to digress for a second. You go in, you got a patient sitting on the exam table. You go, you knock on the door, you walk in, you start talking, hey, what's wrong with your shoulder? Well, it hurts when I do this, doc. And besides saying, don't do that, you can't recommend some course of treatment. But before you can implement that course of treatment, you have to ask somebody in Washington if it's okay, correct?
So what you have to do is you have to develop a diagnosis code. Now, they recently changed this thing to something called the ICD-10 codes, which took 4,700 codes for all conditions in medicine and increased them to 147,000 codes, okay? This is another part, another ramification of not the Obamacare legislation itself, but of the regulations that were passed after that, okay? So this on average makes my day about an hour and a half longer. I have to go through and sift through 147,000 codes to come up with a code, okay? So when I come up with that code, it gets sent to the insurance company for billing purposes and diagnostic purposes, and then the insurance company, come January 1st, 2017, will have a protocol based on what that code is. And for the codes I use the most, we will have to print out that code. Would have to print out that code so that when that code, I made that diagnosis, I know exactly what the insurance company / government wants me to do as far as that protocol is concerned. So I know if I'm going to violate the code or not.
And be taxed and fined.
It's ridiculous. And this is what I've suggested. I've suggested that medical school stop being 4 years long and be 1 month long. I've suggested that if you're going to cookbook medicine like they want to do, government and the insurance industry wants to do, let's teach people the lingo. Let's teach them how to do a physical examination. Let's teach them how to make a diagnosis, basically. And you know what? Let's make medical school 1 month long. Let's make residency maybe 6 months long, and then you're done.
You turn your head and cough, doc. I can take care of that one.
It's very, as I said, and this is why I think where my impact comes now is going different operating room and just letting as many people know as I can of what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Next question from Andrew. Again, kind of going off in different directions, which is what A to A is all about.
Yeah, sure.
With the militia presence being so strong in Michigan, mm-hmm. what is your take or your impression of what took place in Oregon a couple of months ago?
Well, I'm all for freedom of speech. I'm all for exercising that freedom of speech. I think that The way the Oregon situation was handled was obviously different than what happened at the Bundy Ranch in Nevada, the way it was
right.
handled.
Mm-hmm.
I think taking over a federal government facility, if you're probably you're looking for some trouble.
Yeah.
I think that there's a way to express yourself. I can tell you that nobody's good. Anybody that's a patriot that's trying to fight, I believe, oppression, that's a good thing. But you don't do any good if you're in jail or if you're dead.
Right.
And by taking over that facility, I think they ensured themselves that they'd either be in jail or dead.
Yeah.
And I think there's a way potentially they could have gone about it. But they, I think if I would have involved in that, I think I would have done things. I know I would have done things a bit differently. I think there's a lot of different ways to raise awareness around with the alternative media being so strong now. I think there are ways to get the message out as opposed to you couldn't get the message out other than doing something like this 20 years ago, 10 years ago. But with the alternative media being so strong and at least the internet being so strong right now, I really think that there are other ways to pull that off.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got, you know, you have a fellow who got killed. You have a, I mean, the whole mess. And unfortunately, I think the way it was handled, it gave some of the globalists some talking points about how to marginalize those of us that are pushing for freedom and liberty.
Yeah, yeah. These people are lunatics, and this land is our land.
And that doesn't mean they were. It just means that I think you have to be cognizant of where the strengths are of the globalists and their system and where their weaknesses are. And I don't think they particularly went after their weaknesses. I think they actually played into their strengths a little bit. And that's where I think the Oregon situation went south.
Excellent point. A follow-up from Andrew said, do you see societal, economic, financial collapse coming to a head soon? And how would that fit with the rise of Trump/Sanders in the political sphere?
So I do believe, and I have stated, I do believe an economic reset is coming. As far as timing, we all know whenever you start playing timing issues, you end up with egg on your face. Only a much higher power knows when that's coming. But I do believe, and I don't mean globalist power, I do believe there is a reset coming. I believe a significant economic reset. I think that it's going to be tumultuous for a period of time. How long? I don't know. I can tell you that our family, we have plans that to try to protect ourselves as best we can from myriad of different sides of this issue for a good 6 months. Now, I hope it's not going to last that long. It'd be nice if it was 6 hours, but I don't think it's going to be 6 hours. I hope it's not going to be 6 months, but I do believe there is an economic reset happening. And I do believe that the emergence of Trump and of Sanders is, I think, an awakening that's occurring in the public,
yeah.
An awakening that something is wrong. Most people, as opposed to the turdites out there and your community and the community I hope I serve in through Operation Freedom, I think are aware of what the problems are. I think the vast majority of folks know there's an issue, know their problems. They're not quite sure what they are, but they know there's something wrong. And I think that's why you see the emergence of Trump and Sanders.
Yeah. That actually, I misspoke. That question came from Russell. The follow-up question from Andrew actually deals with something that you deal with and talk about on your show quite a bit, which is vaccinations.
Yeah.
Andrew just wanted to know if you've seen that film called Vaxxed, and what do you think about, I guess that was going to be featured at De Niro's film festival, but now it's not going to be. What do you make of the film and that?
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
The guy I have on my show, and I'm going to see it. I was going to watch it this weekend. The guy who I have on my show, who I believe is probably the best guy in the world at vaccination issues, because he used to run the vaccination program for all of Health Canada, which is the Canadian version of the FDA, is Shiv Chopra.
Mm-hmm.
His site, Shiv, C-H-I-V, Chopra, C-H-O-P-R-A, ShivChopra.com. He has tons of information, great information, solid information. He's an incredible incredibly gifted individual. And I can tell you, Shiv, who oversaw their vaccination program, the first question I always ask Shiv when he comes on my show, Shiv, is there any vaccination that you believe is efficacious, has ever been efficacious? And is there any vaccination that's ever been safe, found to be safe? And his answer to both are, I don't know of any.
And again, reiterate, in case anybody missed the first part, Dr. Shiv Chopra?
Chopra, C-H-O-P-R-A. Yeah, he's the former head of the vaccination program in Canada for Health Canada, which is the Canadian version of the FDA. He oversaw that program, the safety and efficacy of the vaccination program in Canada. He has become a whistleblower. He's despised by the medical industrial complex, as I call them. I believe he's an honest man. I believe he's a courageous man. I've gone through his data in great detail that he has generated over the years. I think he's accurate. At a minimum, when it comes to vaccinations, the big problem I have with vaccinations is the additives they have to them that are supposed safe. Yeah. Formaldehyde. I mean, let's face it, when we die, they take our blood out, they put formaldehyde in.
Right.
That's safe. That's in vaccinations. Aluminum, thimerosal, mercury. These are all neurotoxins. No. I mean, I think if you're going to, if you want to play a little bit down the middle, so you can say to your doc, I'll take the vaccination, but without the additives. Yeah. Without the additives. But I'm not convinced based, and I'll understand something. My education in medical school residency was vaccinations were good. They never discussed the additives. They never discussed the downside. It was just assumed that everybody should be having these vaccinations across the board. And that was my education. As I've gotten to know folks like Shiv, as I've gotten to look at more and more data, I truly believe there are huge issues with the vaccination. I think it's a huge money grab for big pharma. I believe it's immediately gets dumped into politicians' pockets to force legislation that just keeps the beast going. I have significant problems with thimerosal and aluminum and formaldehyde, just to name a couple that are in these vaccinations. I think they can be deleterious to one's health.
Dave, I've got us at about 45 minutes. Do you have some time for just a few other questions?
I have clinic starting 5 minutes ago.
Oh, shoot. Okay. Let me see if I can just pick off anything that's quick then, and I apologize.
I got some folks waiting to go.
All right, so should I wrap this up?
And my boss, who runs my clinic, she's a wonderful person, but she can be vicious.
All right, can we do this in 5 minutes?
Let's do five minutes.
Ted wants to know, other than IRS harassment, have you ever been threatened for speaking the truth on your radio show?
Yes, continually, at least every week.
Like somebody calling the house through a brick through your window, anything like that, or?
I've had not to give anybody any ideas. I've had death threats incredibly frequently, and I've had phone calls, emails. I've had people come visit. Let's say I've so yes,
okay.
Yes.
All right.
But I can assure you, one other thing. I take my Second Amendment rights very seriously. And if I ever felt that there was a choice to make,
yes,
I would walk away and that other person wouldn't.
I remind trolls, since now anybody knows where they can find me, that the state in which I reside is a concealed carry state.
Yeah, very good, as is ours.
You don't want to surprise anybody in this state. Okay, Gabe, do you see an ominous outcome in this trend of centralized government, insurance-controlled medicine, where in the not-too-distant future, our medical structure no longer has the creative flexibility or resilience to respond to unforeseen pandemics?
Actually, not just pandemics, against just standard disease states that we've always been able to control. You see, one of my big fears with this big government, big business incestuous relationship that's developed is they will use their protocols to determine who lives and who dies.
Right.
It's the ultimate control mechanism. And when Sarah Palin was talking about the death panels, people were making fun of her. She was actually on target. These are rationing boards. They're not death panels. And the death panel and the death panel, the rationing boards will determine who gets treated and who doesn't. So not just pandemics. I mean, stuff that we normally right. deal with now. You get cancer. They're going to tell you, you know what? Take the blue pill.
Yeah,
take
you know,
the pain medicine.
Saving. You know,
you're yeah, you don't need the, you're not going to get the chemo. And we already see it happening.
Yeah.
It's kind of like this isn't the future. This is now.
Again, they wrote her off because she used the term death panels. It wasn't that what she was talking about wasn't true or in the legislation. It just they're able to marginalize her by the words that she used.
Yeah.
Okay. Doc, I tell you what, I know you got to go. Do you have time at least for the final four?
Yeah.
We'll hit them quick. This is just four quickies just to wrap up on our way out. So let's hit them if you're ready. The first and foremost, almost baseball season, the over-under on the Detroit Tigers is 83 wins. Are they going to be over or under that number?
They're going to be over.
Okay.
Miggy's going to have a really good year.
If he can stay
and healthy. Verlander's going to come back.
All right. If Cade Upton isn't taking all of his time, and frankly, I just, you know, I know which direction I'd go if I were him.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good problem to have.
Second of all, you live in Michigan. What is the proper way to describe a Michigan resident? Is a Michigander, a Michiganian, or a Michiganite?
I think a Michigander, isn't it?
Fair
enough. Maybe it's a Michiganian.
See, I don't know.
I always think of it as a Wolverine, being from U of M. But I would say a Michigander.
Okay.
What is it?
Fair enough. No, I don't know. I just haven't been spent much time in Michigan.
I think it's Gander, but I go with Wolverine.
You know, Michigan's got the second most coastline of any U.S. state behind Alaska. How about that?
That I was aware of, actually. We have beautiful coastline here.
And really, there any time you could stand any place in the state of Michigan and be no more than 85 miles from a Great Lake. So these are all little worthless stats that I came up with today. Okay, next time I'm in Ann Arbor, I'm supposed to go to Zingerman's Delicatessen. What should I have when I go there?
Dave's Open Road. I think it's number 72.
Number 72.
Yeah.
What's in it?
Dave's Open Road.
Well, what's in it, Dave's Open Road?
What's that?
What is it? What's in it?
Dave's Open Road is this really great. There's chicken. It's this really great chicken sandwich on this grilled. It's almost like a Reuben, but with chicken.
Dude, it's lunchtime, so I'm just going to stop.
I know it's
right.
Really good.
Lastly, and I want you to pay attention to how I phrase this final question. Okay, so you realize that it's a total open book. Who will be president of the United States on January 21st, 2017?
Joe Biden.
Okay. Fair enough. Write that down.
I believe Hillary's going to get indicted, and I know people don't believe it.
I know it is.
I believe Hillary's going to get indicted. Biden's going to step in, and when Biden steps in, I think whoever's on the other side. As crazy as Biden is, as goofy as he is, I think he wins.
He'll do great.
I don't want that. I don't want that because it's Obama's third term, but I think that's what's going to happen.
It'll be a great endorsement for the hair plugs industry. So,
sure. Yeah, you got that right. That
friend,
the crazy uncle in the basement.
It is. It's always a pleasure, Dave. Operation Freedom every Sunday. 3 to 5 Eastern on Wham Talk Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. But of course, you can look it up and get the podcasts at the OperationFreedom.com website, correct?
Absolutely, that's correct. Hey, you know, Craig, I was just thinking about the interview and some of the information. There's one thing I think I need to change. Correct.
Okay.
When I was talking about allopathic medicine, I was talking about it. I mentioned about it being like alternative medicine. Really, allopathic medicine is the definition, I think, given in thinking about it, by alternative medicine folks to, if you will, standard treatment with like drugs and
right.
the treatment I do. So that's the only correction I have in what we said.
Fair enough. Appreciate you going back to that. And my friend, it is always a pleasure to visit with you. Please keep up the good work. Let us know anything we can do to help. And we just look forward to where the road takes you going forward, though I do wish you still knew how to brew a good Pilsner.
Yeah, I do too. Life would be a lot simpler.
It would be different. There'd be a Janda ball field and a Janda foundation and all that stuff.
It would be a different life.
Yeah, that's for sure. But we need you in this life. So thank you for all you do, my friend, and we'll visit again soon.
Well, thank you for your kindness, and thanks to the community for being so receptive to what we do in Operation Freedom and the information we try to provide.
All right, Doc. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thanks, Greg. Always a great pleasure.